No one plans for hair loss, but through Hims, you can take the next step with confidence. Access treatments made with clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil to stop hair loss and regrow hair in 3 to 6 months. No waiting rooms, no hoops, just ingredients with a track record of results. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hims brings expert care straight to you, with 100% online access to personalized treatments that put your goals first. For simple online access to personalized and affordable care for hair loss, ED, weight loss, and more, visit hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your free online visit. hims.com/Hail Mary. Individual results may vary, based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and we're back for part two of our discussion about the Ravens defensive roster that we do every bye week with Brian McFarland. Brian, how you doing?
Good, Ken. Enjoy talking through this stuff. It's always, not this year as much as always. I'm a little early this year, but also early to have to worry about next year. But here we are. So
I'm kind of always worried about next year. And I think in the line of work, the type of writing you do, you're kind of always worried about next year, whether you say it or not. So we just got finished talking about CJ Okoye. And if you're wondering, we're in the middle of the developmental category. So we talked about the Ravens' young producers. The big story there was how the Ravens really haven't signed a lot of their expiring contracts. None of the tight ends has been signed. They haven't signed Travis Jones. Isaiah Likely's obviously in that tight end group. They haven't signed Linderbaum. The only guy they have signed is a guy they're kind of signing a year early in terms of Kyle Hamilton. So unfortunate, I think we both thought, and just pointing you back to listening to that episode, give that a shot if you would. We talked through the first half of the developmental players, including some positive thoughts about Buchanan, up and down with Green, some nice thoughts about CJ Okoye and the kind of story he is and the opportunity he probably gets in the second half. So if you want to listen to that, please tune into that first episode. Some great information from Brian. And we have even more to look forward to from Brian in this half, because now we get into a lot of the tough salary cap discussions once we get through this developmental group. But let's move on and talk about Aeneas Peebles a little bit. A really interesting draft pick for the Ravens in that he's a little smaller than their typical defensive lineman. They like their big linemen as opposed to undersized guys.
Yeah, and obviously that's probably why he lasted till the sixth round. A little disappointed he was inactive last week. But obviously I think they were more worried about stuffing the run at that point, or stuffing the holes in the run game, maybe, but without Roquan and others. So but yeah, I mean, he's an intriguing guy. Certainly, sixth round pick, you hope the best from, and they, to be honest with you, most of the time you don't get the best from, but, he's certainly an intriguing guy because he does, even at his size, he seems to be able to push the pocket and from the middle, and that at least is history in college. So hopefully that promise can, show up over the next couple of years.
He's been a situational pass rusher so far with the Ravens. Very extreme pass to run breakdown of snaps, about 3-1, a little more than 3-1 for him right now. Plays a little field goal block, but no special teams. And that's typically all you would play. You might play on either side of the field goal unit if you're a defensive lineman. For him, it's the field goal block unit. So provided some pressure, but the Ravens, you mentioned the needed to get him on the field. They needed to stop the run. They're just limited opportunities for this particular Ravens defense to have third and long situations or situations where you have a 2-score lead where a player like Peebles is very useful to try and close it out.
No, absolutely. That's a very good point. Yeah. I mean, in past years, he probably would have been getting a lot more snaps, but obviously, we aren't playing from in front much anymore.
Yeah. Marquise Robinson, the next guy on our list, played very well in the preseason, allowing just 29 yards on 10 targets. He was one of the guys I thought was a jet black horse to make the roster, but certainly a top of practice squad guy. And I'm actually marginally surprised that he's lasted as long as he has on the Ravens practice squad, because roster is a trip. you know, as the year goes on, that replacement level goes down across the NFL, and particularly at cornerback. I just think it's fairly likely that he'll get taken at some point.
Yeah, I mean, and usually what you're going to see is December being the time when teams that are out of contention are looking at next year, and there's a lot of poaching from practice squads going on then, as well. You know, this guy, and we've lost these guys to IR, so we got a spot on our 53, or this guy's not going to be here next year, so we're going to cut him, and then they look around to other teams' practice squads, and you know, and see what they. What's out there. And so that's a big, those last couple of weeks are a big time for poaching for sure.
So if you're the Ravens and you're in this position, what tools do you have in the chest to deal with that poaching or anticipate it? So you're obviously watching injuries across the league, I assume, but then injuries occur and you think, you know, he's probably on a short list of five that the next week could be the week. Or the week after that could be the week. What can you do at that point?
Well, I mean, you either have to bring them up to the 53, which means cutting somebody else. Now, you know, injuries happen, so it may just work out that you can do that. You know, and I don't, you know, we haven't been in this situation in a long time to see how the, you know, in DaCosta's time, we haven't been in this situation where, you know, as of, you know, December 1, we could be done. Hopefully not, but you know, and that, so that will be a little different because they may be the ones looking to poach. Mm-hmm. That, you know, they may be, well, this, we, you know, we love this guy in the draft and he's sitting over here on so-and-so's practice squad. So it may be the reverse. The timing is important because, you get 3 years, 3 games, 6 games is an accrued season, which allows you mm-hmm. to advance through free agency. But 3 games gives you your year for the pension, gives you your year for a lot of benefits. So that's really important. If it's the last game of the season and you're just making a one game, you know, 53 man roster paycheck versus the practice squad, you might be able to talk the guy into staying and look, we're gonna, you know, as soon as the season's over, we're gonna sign you to a contract next year, we love you, you like it here, you know, that kind of stuff. But if it's early December, that's harder to, you know, you can't really talk a guy in because you might be able to talk the player and the agent's going to turn around and say, whoa, hold on, look at what you're giving up. You're giving up a year towards your pension, towards health benefits, things like that. So that's one of those key factors involved in that. So, but again, we could be the poachers this year for once.
I'm going to bring up another name and how he possibly could relate to Marcus Robinson. That's Jair Alexander. So he hasn't played well this year. You're concerned about poaching of a player like Robinson. You're not happy with the way Alexander's season is gone. Do you see a possibility the Ravens could cut Alexander and add Robinson to the 53?
I mean, I could see that happening if this season is, I mean, I assume they still hope they can get something out of Alexander for their $4 million, but it is fully guaranteed. So he's getting it whether he's here or not. But yes, he could be a guy in those last 3 weeks or so. That if they feel there's somebody that, you know, could be poached and they just decide to, you know, pull the plug on the Alexander experience and move on. And, you know, and that might allow Alexander to catch on somewhere else. Who knows? You know, I mean, if he continues the way he is now, I don't know that that would happen. But, you know, we saw people pick up Deontay Johnson, not comparing them, and, you know, in their, in their head, so to speak. But I mean, that could, you know, so that could give him an opportunity maybe. And it could be at some point that's, you know, just one of those kind of like they just did with Gardner Johnson.
Yeah.
Where it was kind of like, okay, you know, this isn't working. So, you know, we'll both just, you know, agree to move on. And, you know, that could be a situation if the season is done, you know, that they might do that with Alexander. And then that way they can bring up a younger guy and perhaps play a younger guy. You know, I guess at this point you're not taking away. Alexander has no snaps to give away since he hasn't, he's barely had any. So it's not like that will free up snaps, but you know, there might be other opportunities for that young guy to come in.
Yeah, I mean, he could play special teams, but the other thing would be that a player like Johnson, sorry, wait, like Robinson, could get approached by another team and say, "Hey, we're gonna sign you to our team off Baltimore's practice squad." Well, he's not required to
No.
sign that deal with another
No.
team. And
No.
one of the things that's very typically done is that player, if he likes his current coaches, he likes his current situation, doesn't want to move. I mean, that's an actual reason, guys. It just says, "Hey, Buffalo's trying to sign me. Do you guys want me? Because I'd be happy to sign with you guys. I'd much prefer to stay here."
Yeah, I mean, if there's a 53 man roster spot, I don't think he's going to stay on the practice squad.
No,
But
no. Oh,
you
yeah, you
know,
got to elevate me.
yeah, you got to, yeah. So, and I'm sure that, I mean, that's happened before. I mean, if you've heard stories, and I'm trying to remember, there was an offensive lineman.
Will Holden was the one who gave the
Was
Ravens a
that
chance, but then they had to let him go.
okay? But there was a younger guy a couple years ago that they saw that they were afraid of losing, and they ended up signing into the 53. But it didn't turn out to be anybody important, unfortunately. But that was kind of one of those situations of we're hearing, we're hearing rumors. I don't think it was to the point where the player was actually offered a deal. It was, we're hearing teams are sniffing around, so we're gonna, and the agent probably came in and said, other teams are sniffing around him. It's time to get him on the 53, or you're going to lose him.
And the Ravens did pick up a guy we're going to talk about later, or at least he's on the list for later. It's Oworiyeh, I think it is.
Oh,
It's
yes.
close to that. They picked him up, and I don't see anything to like about that guy. I mean, he's almost 30 years old. He doesn't have any track record of play. I don't. He did have six interceptions for the Lions at I think at one point in the past,
Yeah. Well, I think that was just kind of when the health of the, now they've got more safeties, now they've, well, actually, I guess, well, they've
Corner,
got
yeah.
Gilman. I mean, CJ Gardner-Johnson is gone already, but yeah, I mean, and I think that's probably what it was. He's probably a guy on the, end of the practice squad, so to speak. He's the, as I was saying, the 53 man, the 53rd guy. He's going to be the 16th guy on the practice squad, and when they need another spot, he'll probably be one of the guys to go, assuming health, sticks with everybody else from here on out.
Gotcha. All right, let's move on. Trenton Simpson's the next guy. Take a big step forward in 2025. Had a turbulent 24. Started as the weak side linebacker. They went to a dime defense fairly early in the season. About week three, they finally benched Simpson fairly unceremoniously for the combination of Board and Harrison to replace him, which is not something you want to have as in highlights on your resume.
And obviously, but neither of those guys are here, so it wasn't like the Ravens valued them that. I mean, they liked them on special teams more than anything, but obviously, I'd be curious if those guys have gotten any snaps elsewhere, wherever they ended up on defense. But anyway. That's an aside. But yeah, so I mean, Simpson's a guy, obviously, they thought a lot of. Obviously, his future potentially is tied to what happens with Roquan Smith next year. But there's certainly an opportunity there for him to continue in a starting role, or at least a lot of snaps.
Yeah, if you're a if you're a Higgins, you're already kind of in the Ravens plan since you're on the 53. If you're a Chandler Martin and you have a decision to make when another team comes calling, you might really take into account the fact that Roquan might not be here in 26 as a significant, opportunity. Because I mean, there's going to be movement between the positions. You won't be in competition necessarily with the Buchanan for the Mike spot. Yeah, they might bring in somebody else, but they might not also. And then you have an opportunity for playing time.
Yeah, for sure. And I, most of the time, if you've spent the whole season on the practice squad, most of the time you end up re-signing there because you know the system, you're comfortable, as you said, the moving part. I mean, there are definitely some, the more veterans are the ones that don't end up re-signing because they want to wait and see if there's another opportunity. Anthony Miller was one of those guys. They didn't re-sign him back in the beginning of the season, but what in, I don't know, June or May or June, he ended up signing because it wasn't a, better offers anywhere else. So a lot of that happens with the veteran guys. They don't sign as quickly, but most of the young guys, they'll re-sign pretty quickly. And I would think, I would say Martin would be one of those guys that they would definitely bring back.
All right. Let's talk about Malachi Starks a little bit. And obviously, I don't think anybody would say that they've gotten what they hope to get out of Malachi Starks in a rookie year with the 27th overall pick. He hasn't really been good in coverage. He's allowed 11.0 yards per target and 150.9 passer rating against him. But he has played 416 defensive snaps. He leads the entire defense in snaps. So at least that is something. And the Ravens are kind of force-feeding him to play that one position at as a free safety as opposed to moving all over the place as he was doing at Georgia.
Yeah, I mean, that one, everything, thumbs pointing up, so to speak, all through OTAs and training camp. And they spoke so glowingly of him. And I don't think they were making that up, because the reporters were saying, the people who are watching also, obviously it's not the coaches, but, they were saying, he looked really good. So it is disappointing. And whether that's just because the whole defense is in disarray, and that's not helping him, or, if there's more pass rush, then the corners would hold up better, then the safeties wouldn't have to do as much, those kinds of things. But they've got hopefully four more years under contract if you include the fifth year option, but hopefully it is, he's the next Hamilton, just not the immediate impact that Hamilton had.
Now, I'll say this. The faster version of Kyle Hamilton is playing for Seattle right now, and he is killing it in his first 90 or so snaps. But Nick Emmanuel from South Carolina was the guy I really loved in the draft. My God, is he great.
Did he last till the third, or did he go in the second?
He went in the either late first or in the second to Seattle. Okay. It was like around pick, I want to say it was around pick 33, 34.
Okay, was that
like
early? Anyway. Was that early?
Yeah, so. I mean, it wasn't too much later, but the Ravens should have considered him at 27. That was the place to get him if they wanted him. All right, TJ Tampa, the last guy on the projection, on the developmental list, I should say. He's moved ahead of Alexander on the depth chart, which is the interesting part so far. Played 112 snaps at corner so far this year, which is good. I mean, at least he's getting some playing time. Couple of things are going on with Tampa, but certainly the cornerback room looks very open next year, and yet I'm looking at Tampa and thinking there may be a guy who makes a position change.
Yeah, probably not yet. Now they could cross train him, obviously, depending upon what they do. Marlon's back, obviously, that's one spot. If they bring Awuzie back, that's another, but yeah, I mean, and obviously they could, we got the 2 6th round picks coming back next year. They would probably be behind him at this point, obviously, unless they have a great spring and summer. And then whoever they draft. So, I mean, that's certainly a possibility. Obviously his size lends more towards a safety than a corner. But if you got a big corner who can do it, then that's fantastic, especially with guys like Higgins and Chase, and Metcalf in the division. I'm not saying he can, not a lot of guys can keep up with those guys, but if you can keep them down relatively enough, that's a good game.
Yeah.
So one way or another, I can't imagine he won't be on the team next year, barring some catastrophe, or some terrible injury, which is a catastrophe, I think he's an appropriate list, and ideally maybe, there's a step up in the next year or so and get him up to the higher level.
It would be nice. He's got to find his position, whether that's going to be on the outside and he can play there. The big problem with him, it seemed, from my perspective, is he doesn't have top end speed and he plays like it, which means he plays soft and he gives too much cushion because he's afraid of getting beat deep and not having the makeup speed to deal with it. So, all right. Let's move on. I did want to talk about this. They had eight players in this group at the 2024 bye week. So it's expanded a lot, although a couple of the players are on IR already, like Isaac and Kone and Longer Beam, are not obviously active for the team right now. But they had only eight players last week. Four were removed. Armour Davis got released. Braid got released and claimed by the Giants. Ajabo got changed to the transitional category. So he's still around, but he's not in a good place. And then Stevens was signed as a UFA by the Jets. The range of the players added were 2025 UDFAs and the, picks are UDFAs, with the exception of Okoye, who is the one guy who had any kind of previous NFL experience, and that was only in the preseason. So
Yeah.
Let's talk about some veterans playing for market value. Now, there's nine guys on this list, and unfortunately, seven of them are free agents. One is hurt, and we don't know how badly. And the ninth guy is Kyle Hamilton, but we'll go through them fairly quickly here. So Chidobe Awuzie, and let's talk about them kind of as a group, the defensive backs here for a second. Chidobe Awuzie, Alohi Gilman, and Ardarius Washington are the three defensive backs that are on this list. All are free agents at the end of the year, and all are market value guys. Awuzie, a bargain guy, frankly, because they got an offset deal on him.
Right, right. Yeah, so I mean, I think Awuzie might be a guy they'll bring back if the price is right. I mean, that typical mantra. I think the Gilman and Washington are sort of tied together, maybe. If they feel Washington will be healthy and can assume the role he was in last year, then they kind of are. You're probably not bringing them both back unless you're getting Washington for a dirt cheap deal, which could be possible given the injury, especially if he doesn't end up playing at all this year. But you know, and obviously we're one game in, but the difference Gilman make was incredible. I mean, for lack of, maybe that's a little too strong, but stunning. And that's still not the right word, but. So, you know, that'll be interesting. I think he's going to be, if he truly, you know, assumes that role and you know, and tightens things up, so to speak, that'll be an interesting one. You weren't, you know, as of 2 weeks ago, you weren't even thinking, you know, about it all. You're thinking about the names you've already mentioned as far as who the most important guys to resign, but he could vault himself into that spot. Or one of those spots, I should say. So, you know, I mean, I think the hope would be they can get Awuzie back for cheap and Washington back for cheap. And maybe, you know, if Gilman, again, continues on the way, at least it's one game, so it's obviously a small sample size. But if he continues on, I mean, I think they'd like to have all three back. Whether that ends up being possible is going to depend on how they all play, or at least the two of them play, and how they play, and then if Washington plays at all.
Yeah, you have a team like this, they really need five safeties to play four spots. So you never can count on all your safeties being healthy or even staying healthy through a single game. So if you have four safeties active and you really have plans to use all four during that game, you wouldn't go into any other position. Like you wouldn't go in with two cornerbacks into a game where you need two outside cornerbacks for every single play. You'd always have extras. So if you're going to have a dime back and you're going to have Kyle Hamilton at big nickel and you're going to have the two back end safeties, you know, covered as well, you really need five guys active for the game. And maybe you only need four corners in that situation if you have two outside corners, but you need to have five safeties. And that's something the Ravens really didn't seem to get this year, and I think it really hurt the team. But Washington and Gilman both being on that team, I could definitely see that. I could see them drafting another safety as well.
Yeah. And also will depend on who the defensive coordinator is next year. You know, if Orr is back, then, you know, but if it could be a different system and safeties, you know, they may not need that as much depth at safety based on whatever system the new OC or the DC is running.
Yeah. I'll just say, if that were really true, then I really resent every defensive coordinator who's ever told me that you have to build your system for your players and not use your system to make your players fit it.
Right.
But I'm not trying to beat on you, Brian. I'm just saying that I'm so tired of hearing that, because I think it's really an organizational level decision to decide what system you want to run, and then you draft and acquire players to fit that system. I think that's much more the direction that teams typically go. And so I don't like it when DCs, you know, do that. But there are occasionally there are times like has happened with the Ravens this year where they've had to make drastic in-season changes because of injuries. So
yeah.
All right. Let's talk about the defensive linemen in this group. So the defensive line, they have three guys on this list who won't be here next year or potentially might not be. John Jenkins and Brent Urban, both of them are free agents. And Nabe Matabike, who we don't know.
Yeah, I mean, Urban's one of those guys. I don't, you know, at some point he's going to hang it up. But until he does, he seems, you know, especially the way this year seemed to play out, it's almost like they knew this was going to play out this way. So, you know, you get to the weekend of training camp and then he got signed or something like that. And then he's happy to be on the practice squad. I think we all miss Michael Pierce more than we thought we were going to miss Michael Pierce, but we know Urban does for sure. Some of the some of the videos of the two of them on the sideline
Antics,
together
yeah.
were just amazing. Maybe that's what they're missing. So he, I, you know, he's not somebody to worry about, quote unquote. Obviously, and Jenkins is, I mean, they signed him late as well. 1.8 million, you know, so I, you know, if he continues to play well enough, he could be a guy that could easily be back because it's not going to break the bank. Madubuike, you know, obviously we don't know what's totally going on there, but anytime you talk about a neck injury and is cryptic, I guess, as Harbaugh has been about it, it doesn't sound good, and that's going to be a real. I mean, he's due $22 million in cash next year. That's fully guaranteed. If he retires, he gives it up. You know, that would be doing the Ravens an incredible solid. And he doesn't have to. He's by playing on a 4 years on a rookie deal for next to nothing. This is his, you know, other than the signing bonus, this is his first big salary. So he's probably, if even if he's done, he's going to sit on IR all next year. His cap number will be 30 million. You know, there's nothing you can do about it because he's getting the money anyway. And then they would probably, it's still a lot of dead money the year after that. So he's probably one of those post June 1 releases the following year, because they did use void years on his deal. You know, fingers crossed, this is a way premature conversation. But though, you know, there's not a lot of options there. And even if he's done, he's going to be on this team, so to speak. And, you know, he's going to be on this team's cap for sure in a big way at 30 million.
I hope they can make the best of that situation, whatever that means. If you get him on the field, that's obviously making the best. If he can mentor, if he can be a positive force in the defensive line room, if he could maybe, you know, think about getting into coaching, whatever it might be. I hope they can make the best of the situation. I hope he can make the best of the situation. But I'll tell you this, I noticed the exact same thing you did with Harbaugh. The syntax of this sounds like it's the end of the line.
Eerie,
And when
yeah.
he says something like, I'm going to let you talk to him about it, that sounds to me like Madubuike is going out and possibly seeking other second opinions. But
Yes.
someone close to the Ravens has already told him, you're not going to play again.
Yeah.
And
I'm a, yeah, that's the worst fear, and that's sort of where I am too, yeah.
all right. And then the other guys who were in this group, Kyle Hamilton's obviously re-signed. Jake Hummel, guy they can probably have back for special teams with not too much of a premium being paid. They got him at the vet minimum this year.
Yeah, that shouldn't be a problem. Yeah.
And then Kyle Van Noy, who I would assume is gone. One of the things I didn't hear you talked about Van Noy in the first episode. You talked about him not playing the same number of snaps as he has this year. There's no doubt about it. He's not going to play the same number of snaps he did last year. This year, he's not going to be as good as he was last year, obviously, ever again. But the other thing is, Van Noy was very bitter when he finally arrived at camp, and he didn't go to OTAs, or at least some of the OTAs. When he did finally get to camp, he was at the podium for the first time, and he did something that I'm sure the PR people don't like, is he basically overtly complained about not getting a new contract without actually using those specific words.
Yeah, and then later he did say, I guess they, because they did make a slight adjustment with his deal, gave him some more reachable incentives. They didn't change any of the money really, but they added some incentives. So I guess that made him happy enough. I'm not sure he's going to reach those.
Let me tell you about the online cannabis company that's changing the game, Mood.com. They created an entirely line of functional gummies, 100% federally legal THC blends, discreetly delivered right to your doorstep. And here's the best part. You can get 20% off your first order at Mood.com with the promo code RAVENS. Now, I've tried a bunch of their gummies myself. Each one's totally unique. The Sleepy Time gummies knock me out right away. They help me unwind fast, leave me refreshed the next morning. The Epic Euphoria gummies, they're perfect for when your day just isn't going the way you want it to go. What makes Mood special is how they pair the THC with natural herbs and adaptogens. You won't find blends like this at any local shop. They've got gummies designed for focus, relaxation, clarity, even energy, all made from cannabis grown on small, family-owned American farms. No pesticides, no shortcuts, just high-quality weed you can trust. Plus, Mood backs everything with a 100-day satisfaction guarantee. So head on over to Mood.com, check out their amazing selection, and don't forget to use the promo code RAVENS at checkout to save 20% off your first order.
No one plans for hair loss, but through Hims, you can take the next step with confidence. Access treatments made with clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil to stop hair loss and regrow hair in 3 to 6 months. No waiting rooms, no hoops, just ingredients with a track record of results. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hims brings expert care straight to you with 100% online access to personalized treatments that put your goals first. For simple online access to personalized and affordable care for hair loss, ED, weight loss, and more, visit hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your free online visit. hims.com/Hail Mary. Individual results may vary. Based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
This Black Friday, get 6 months free when you move your WordPress sites to Kinsta. Enjoy faster load times, no stress when traffic spikes, and hosting you can actually count on. We're G2's number one rated host for WordPress. For a reason. Visit kinsta.com/BF. That's KINSTA.com/BF. Don't miss out. Offer ends December 2nd.
Now, I'm not sure he's going to reach the incentives he reached last year, even, obviously. So, So, what do you say? Is he 34, 35?
Yeah, that's the right range.
I think. So, I agree with you. Even with the lack of, edges they have at this point, I think it's highly unlikely he's back.
All right,
that could be his own accord or theirs. Who knows? But
it seems like he'll be more expensive than what the Ravens want to pay. Right. There may be another team, and unfortunately, he could be the kind of guy who, like the last time when the Ravens got him very cheap, about this time in 2023. Right, 2023 was it 24? Actually,
I think it was 24.
It's 23 because 23 was an exact year. So he played. He played with.
Right, it was 23. Right, year.
Yeah. Right. So. He malingered, on the street for a while. And there were various reasons I think that might have occurred. But he's kind of always been one of those players who thought his value was higher than the than the other 32 teams do.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I mean, he bounced around. And obviously, he said he felt the Ravens used him the way he should have been used in the past. But whether any other team is going to think of 35 or 36 year old, whichever he'll be next year, is worth any kind of money, I'm not sure,
All right, let's move on. Talk about the veteran cap value concern, guys. Well, no, actually, before we move on, the veterans playing for market value had a bunch of guys depart from the 24 group: Chris Board, Malik Harrison, Michael Pierce, and Tre'Davious White. So they were all not insignificant losses from this group, although Harrison and Board were primarily special teams players. They played a fair amount of linebacker last year. Tre'Davious White played some decent corner. Michael Pierce, you just mentioned it in terms of what the Ravens probably, how badly they miss him right now. Mm-hmm. And then you two guys who I had to drop into the next category, which is Marlon Humphrey and Roquan Smith, into the veteran cap value concerns. And the Ravens have a bloated list here of four. Typically, you might have one on each side of the ball. That's what I would consider to be kind of normal. You have one guy that you're kind of already planning to release. Last year, Arthur Mollett, for example, was in that group. Even the contract was not huge. It was going to be too much. This year, they have four guys, and it's Jaire Alexander, who I don't know when he's going to play. He seems to have a good attitude. To be showing up early for weightlifting, but I don't know what to take beyond this from the fact that he's not playing at all. He's clearly the last corner on their roster.
And I'm obviously, my original thought process when he signed, because he signed kind of late, was that they would give him a first couple weeks to get his feet under him, with the idea that he was a guy they needed in the playoffs. And given his injury history, expecting him to get 17 games in playoffs probably wasn't realistic. So why not? We can, almost like being on PUP for the first couple of weeks. He's got to be on the 53, obviously, because he wasn't injured when he arrived at camp. But then they obviously threw him right in the, you know, in the cauldron the first week, and it didn't work out well. And we've barely seen him since. So, yeah, I mean, I don't think he's back next year. I'd be interested to see what his market value will be next year if this year continues this way, or maybe he is back because it's a minimum deal and it's worth giving another shot. I mean, it was $4 million. It'd be nice to have. But I think it, where this team thought they were going to be, I think it was a fair risk. I mean, that was a below market number for him, even despite his injury. So his injury history, I guess I should say. So I think it was a fair gamble. And a lot of fans were saying, we need to go all in. We need to go all in, you know. Well, here you go. Some of these decisions we're going to could start talking about are going all in. And, you know, obviously the downside to going all in is, even if you make it to the Super Bowl and lose, you're not hoisting the trophy. And of course, if you look like the Ravens do now, it's even worse. But it causes trouble in the future. And like I said in the last segment, they're going to have tight cap next year, and they don't have a lot of ways to make cap space. They're going to have a lot of dead money based on some of these guys we're pretty much about to talk about.
So Alexander, we just hit, and he's the only one who's actually a free agent in this group, which means all the other ones, they have to make, you know, quote unquote, tough decisions about. First one I want to talk about is Broderick Washington, because I think the decision is probably the least tough of the three. He'll be in the last year of a three-year extension. And there's about, I think there's about $4 million in saving at 4.1 maybe in cutting him. Any chance he's back with the Ravens on that deal?
I would, unless he, catches fire at some point this year, like he did to earn the contract that, so that was that was one of those getting ahead of the curve, what seemed to be an ascending player. And, fans want to complain when they don't do that, but there are plenty of examples of that happening when they don't work out well. You still want to try to get it done, but there is a downside to getting a less than established player that you're banking on potential as opposed to track record. So I think you're right. Unless something changes drastically over the next couple of months, that $4 million is going to be pretty necessary, maybe even.
Yeah, difficult to pass up. And then two, all pro players who have bloated cap hits next year. And in some ways, it's almost like a two-year move you're making. You're almost making this move for 27 in a sense. But Marlon Humphrey and Roquan Smith coincidentally have the exact same amount of cap savings resulting from a cut in 2026, $7.3 million. They have two different numbers in terms of where they would be cap-wise for the year, but that's not a relevant number. Those numbers that money's already spent.
Right.
The rest of it, other than the $7.3
million. Yeah.
They do have money after that that will be due, that will be a problem. But for next year specifically, it's $7.3 million they can save if they decide to cut either. Do you think either of them is back on those contracts?
I think so. They restructured both of them. They restructured both of them this year, which didn't help those dead money numbers. So, I mean, Roquan's is almost 25 and a half in dead money, and Marlon's is 19. So, as I mentioned a few minutes ago, they're going to be carrying some dead money. Marlon's been so up and down. I mean, this was last year. I've been like, yeah, he's going to be back for the next, they're going to extend him,
Yep.
But here we are now talking about, maybe really, is he done?
So I want to talk through what you just said about the paying them effectively all of their bonus money with the exception of the vet min salary. And I think that they were full simple extensions, right? Both of them?
Actually, no. Roquan's only went down to $3 million. So that's also telling, because the last time they did that was Marcus Peters. In his last year, they took him down to about five. I don't remember where his number started, but they took him down to a $5 million salary, which said to me that they didn't want to go all the way there because they were concerned about him being back. So I mean Roquan's at 3 million. I don't, you know, it's not much more than the veteran minimum in the grand scheme of things. So
I want to talk about this from a pure math perspective, from a pure fungible capital perspective. Let's say they free up $10 million in cap space because they cut Roquan's. So they didn't cut Roquan's salary. They pay him his salary in advance, and then they prorate a portion of that over the remainder of the contract.
Right.
Okay. So they save $10 million in cap space in 2025. That same $10 million exactly, not more, not less, will come due in 26 if he's cut. So it's just a fungible capital movement directly. It's not a, there's not a big change here. And I know there's the inflation of cap dollars, and you're going from 1 year to the next, and you can say those cap dollars are worth more in 25 than they are in 26. But the Ravens are sitting here with $14 million of live cap money right now, presumably they're going to roll that, or a good portion of it, I hope, into next year.
Right. Yeah, the only drawback to that is, given the amount of dead money with Roquan at 25 and Marlon at 19, by rolling it, as you said, it ends up the same as if they cut him. You know, they're planning to cut him anyway, so it's here there. But I just lost my train of thought there for a second. It precludes them from using post June 1 releases.
Oh,
so okay. That's so where
that would be
right.
One reason.
Yes, because I mean it adjusts the numbers there. So it adds, if you want to cut him before and not have to use the post June 1, then the restructure hurt you, I guess is the better way of saying it.
No, if you want to not use the post June 1,
because you can't use June 1 on everybody, you know, so to speak, because then you're
two contracts, right?
Right. So then you can do two at the beginning, the first day of the league year. You can designate two. They stay on your cap, but they're free agents. It doesn't help the team at all. It just helps the player hit the market at the beginning of free agency, not in June. But after June 1, you could do as many. I mean, because any player that released it now is getting post June 1 treatment.
Gotcha. Okay.
So that part, that's not the issue. But it is, you're moving money in that, for instance, Roquan, $25 million in dead money. 10 of that is totally from, I'm actually, you use 10. So yep. 10 of that is essentially in this theater, in this example, would be, If you're cutting him outright, that just added $10 million to 26. But if you're using post June 1, you can spread that out. So it's part of that balancing act there.
Okay, is it only the incremental portion of prorated dollars that come from simple restructures or come from restructures that cannot be post June 1 modified, or is the original amount that was on the contract, is that still?
It's post June 1 and it's, again, it depends on how much 1 year left on the contract. If next year's the last year, you can't post June 1 because there's no next year to spread it out. If there's 2 years, gotcha, you can spread it out over the 2 years. That would be equally.
And that is the case with both of these players, is they have 2 years left.
And if you go, but there's void years too. So, but if it's 3 or more years, then you're throwing more into the future years. Because it's the year you're released, that's that year's bonus proration. The next year, all the future bonus prorations accelerate into that year. Mm-hmm. So if it's just 1 year left, it's the same amount. But if there's more years into the future, and with void years, there's more years into the future. So that's what that makes that second year. Because everybody would say, because if you cut Roquan, if you cut Roquan and use post June 1, you get $20 million in cash savings and $20 million in cap savings this year. But all the other money accelerates in the next. Well, we're talking 26 when I say this year, but then all the rest accelerates into 27. Marlon would be pretty much the same If they post June 1 to him, he's almost 20 as well. I mean, right there, they could do that, but you are totally screwing 27. So you generally, with big players like this, you generally don't want to do too many. You want to kind of do a balancing act there. We'll cut one, then the other, with the post June one outright, the other with the post June one. I know we went on 10 tangents there. So I think your question was, what do I see either of them back? Obviously, I've said this a few times, but the rest of this season is really going to dictate that. I would think Marlon has a better chance of being back than Roquan. And I don't know that I haven't really thought about the parameters of, you know, what percentages either of those would be. Especially with Marlon, I think, because Roquan generally he gets banged up, but he doesn't generally miss games. Marlon obviously misses games, and you know, if he doesn't finish the season strong health wise, especially, that would put him, maybe that would flip flop them if Roquan stays healthy and you know plays reasonably well.
And I know corner is a much more valuable position than safety, but I do think it's probably time for Marlon to move to safety. Maybe you don't have to sign Alohi Gilman back.
Right.
If you have Marlon moving to safety, but he's got to buy into that. You know, he did move to slot corner and that wasn't a problem. You know, he didn't give the team any trouble.
And, you know, it might be the time to, especially with him, you know, go with the, you know, we'll keep you around, but we need a pay cut. You know, we're going to turn some of that $20 million into incentives that you, as long as you stay healthy and produce, then you'll get the money back. But it'll help our cap this year. And we're not, you know, on the hook for $20 million in cash immediately. Even if you get hurt again and we're stuck with you on IR at $20 million.
Is there a practical limit to how many dollars that could be? Like, is effectively $7 million the most that Marlon would ever agree to be moved around in that way? Or could it be more?
Well, it'll depend on how he plays the season out. Because incentives can be based on playing time.
Sure.
So, I mean, if he doesn't play, not going to happen, but if he didn't play another game this year, then they could make an easy incentive based on you play 7 games and then you earn it. Cause that's the way incentives work. You earn it once you top the threshold. Right. And to make it not count for in 26, the threshold would be his stats from the year before. So, I mean, I don't think he has an interception. Do we even have an interception as a team? So if he ended the season now, one interception could earn him, you know, $500,000. They wouldn't go that low with, you know, because that's too easy. But that would still not count against the 26 cap. And if he earns it, it counts against 27. So eventually, if they earn it, the team has to account for it, but it does hedge the bet of you haven't been able to stay healthy. And if you don't play more than you did this year, or you don't reach your statistics this year, then we don't have to pay you. But if you do, then we'll happily hand the money over to you and deal with it on the cap because you've been there and you've been available.
And so those bonuses are called NLTBE bonuses. You'll see them referred to that.
Those are not likely to be earned. Yes. So now once they're earned, then they become likely and they do count against the cap for the following year. So for instance, Van Noy, he got
an escalator then.
Yeah. Well, yeah, he had like $2 million in incentives and he hit each one of them. So those didn't count against last year's cap. They count as an adjustment on this year's cap. So there's just a column of adjustments that tallies up all the incentives earned and not earned the year before. But he also, whatever his incentives were, they count on as part of his cap number this year.
Big question. This is, I forgot to ask this, gigantic question for the Ravens. Is any of Nnamdi Madubuike's insured?
I would think so.
Explain the process too, if you would, please.
So yeah, it's very complicated. It's not a dollar for dollar amount. It's obviously based on games missed, things like that. Well, games missed, but it isn't, you know, if he doesn't play next year, they're not getting $22 million back from insurance. They might get five or six, but
Is that it? I would have thought it'd be more like the insurer is taking 80% of the risk and the team's taking 20 as opposed to the other way around.
well, it's also because it's factored in. It's factored in salary. It factors in bonus money. Like, because they're kind of based on how the bonus is prorated, so you know, and then they spread it out over several years. So with Matabike with 3 years left on his deal, if they got 6 million, they would get 2 million in 16, 2 million in 17, and 2 million in 18. So even though they got a check for 6 million immediately, that it spreads
Account
out
for it.
over the cap for, and I don't know the
Right.
logic to that, but you know, there's a lot of these things that I've learned over the years. I don't know the logic to, so but they did not insure Stanley's for reported rumoredly, if that's the right way to say it. They did not insure Stanley's first, the 2019 deal. Was it 19? I think it was 19.
2000,
So no, it was nine, not
20,
19. It was
20.
20 or 21. So they did not, and I guess they learned their lesson on that one. And I know Lamar's is heavily, obviously, because of the size of it. But so I would have to think. I mean, Matabike's was obviously pretty substantial. So I would have to think there was some. And I, you know, I don't think they took. I don't think there's insurance on Marlins' deal either, because I've never seen. When that money comes in, it does reduce the player's cap number as the NFLPA shows it.
As
So,
a it's a returned by player adjustment, right?
yeah, something like that. I mean, you can see it on Russell Street Report. It's on there, and you'll because it's the only the Pedro's the only thing on the chart that shows a minus, which is from cap space is a plus. But so it shows up. It's shown up under Marcus Williams. His deal was insured. So if his deal was insured, I would have to think Matabike's would be, because Matabike's was obviously a bigger deal.
Right. I would think so too. And if I recall correctly, the return on the Marcus Williams deal was something like 3.2 million or something. I thought it was something fairly
Yeah,
significant
so
since.
they it was a, they got about 600,000 to 700,000 each year they've gotten that.
Okay.
So and they well I we can't that would since he's not on the because I we it was definitely it showed up the last 2 years. It's not on the, it's obviously can't show up on their cap this year, but again, it would be part of those adjustments that there's apparently. People who have access to the NFLPA site, there's no listing of whatever the adjustments are. That's like totally secret. But we know what, you know, we know what makes it up. But there's generally a little bit here, a little bit there that, you know, we don't know about, whether it's incentives or grievances that are settled, which, you know, the minor grievance with a minor player, we obviously never hear about. So those kinds of things.
Yeah, very interesting unknown thing. There are a lot of teams that don't want to pay the premiums for this, but essentially what you're doing is buying an incremental cap space for your team with a premium that probably is too expensive for the insurance. But that's okay because you're buying something much more valuable, additional cap dollars
Right,
with that money.
you're right. And the more successful you are as a team, the more money you in
Yes.
theory bring in. So yeah, absolutely.
All right, we have to move on, and I'm sorry we have to cut it off there, but the great discussion. The transitional players, there are eight on this team, and these are the guys I don't see a future for the players, but somebody probably advances from this group. Taven Bryan, a defensive tackle, was brought in, undersized guy. JT Gray, very unfortunate. He got hurt almost as soon as he got here before he started to get his
Actually,
elevation.
Denver signed him Monday.
Oh,
Yeah.
I didn't tell you. Okay, so he
Yeah.
must have been activated from injured, or
No,
they
because
signed him from injured.
now, well, injured reserve for you're exempt from the practice squad on injured reserve when but so there is a separate area for practice squad injured reserves, but you're still under the practice squad contract, which can be poached at any time. Denver had to put him on the 53. I assume they knew he was going to be healthy enough soon enough. How they knew that sounds like could be tampering, but you know, and he, you know, it's he's well, he's came from the Saints. He's a Sean Payton guy, So obviously that made a lot of sense that they would grab him. Somehow, like I said, so he has to go under 53. If he's not able to play for, you know, or needs to get in shape, you know, things like that, he's going to have to sit on their 53 while he gets there.
They got it. That's what they got inactives for, right? If you got a healthy roster,
Well, if you got the other roster, if otherwise there's, healthy, for sure.
There's always something as we go through this. There's always something where you find something I've missed as I put together my articles on this topic. So I do appreciate that. Malik Ham is transitional. Keandre Jackson, even though he just got elevated to the, I didn't get elevated to 53. Got elevated
practice
from the practice squad for a week. Mm-hmm. Yeah. David Ajabo is in the transitional kick. I know he's on the 53. I just don't see a future for him on this team.
Yeah.
Almost for the rest of this season, I don't see that. And Amani Oruwari. Oruwari. That's what
Oruwari. I think that's it, yeah.
Okay. Kaiman Rucker, who is a chance to play, as we talked about in the first of these two episodes. And Josh Tupo, who is just re-signed to the practice squad a day or two ago, mm-hmm. In terms of finding, because hey, you can never have enough nose tackles. I don't see a future for any of these guys, but if I think one or two may ascend, and if you're talking about the most likely, I would have put JT Gray in that group, but Malik Ham I think is a real possibility of playing this year. So maybe Rucker is my new
Those two, and I think they'll be re-signed next year, you know, and we'll see what happens. Rucker being a rookie. Now Ham, he's had a couple bites of the apple here. He might, if some other team comes along with an off-season contract, he might jump at that just for a change of scenery and a different opportunity. But Taven Bryan was actually a former first round pick
of
the Jaguars, and whichever draft that was. So that was, it was the Lamar draft. So we have Lamar, we have Alexander out of that draft. There was a first round pick.
And Brian
Roquan was a first round pick, and Brian. So we have four of the, of the guys now. Only two of them are contributing at this point, I guess we'll say. But
and you're including Roquan in that group, who's injured now.
Well, too. Right. And Lamar, and Lamar too. Right. So in the the last couple games, none. But I for some reason that draft came up on something, and I was like, wow, look at all those names. And I was like, oh, that's one. We got that.
There you go. Brian, great talking football with you. Thanks so much for coming on and doing the defense here. We're gonna get back together and do the offense, but tell folks where they can talk football with you if they want to.
Sure. So my articles are on Russell Street Report. Right now, obviously, it's a pretty dead time. I always, as much as I kind of love doing it, I hate doing my end of my preview for the next year with all the cap information. At least this year I might have more time to get it together. But I hate the idea of having to start thinking about it. And I obviously am at this point. But otherwise in it, that's Twitter/X, at Raven Salary Cap. I'm there. And, as soon as any kind of information, somebody gets traded, obviously the OA thing came out of nowhere. And that was an easy one to put the numbers together, because we know those numbers, and nobody was, it was reported that nobody was eating money on either side. So those kinds of things. And obviously, players surprisingly released, but once we get to December and January, February through April, pretty much, that's my time of the year.
All right. Outstanding, Brian. Other folks out there, thanks so much for listening. We appreciate you as an audience. I just want to say this particular episode is an example where we don't take you for granted as an audience. I know we had a lot of STEM and finance people out there, and listening to Brian talk about the vagaries of how money is moved around, but then is not subject to post June 1 releases, is something I know at least a few people are connecting with as you do it. So I really appreciate you as an audience. And I can't say enough how important it is to know that there's someone else on the other end of these airwaves listening to this who is valuing it, and it really shows up in the listens we have, and appreciate that greatly. Brian, thanks again for coming on.
Absolutely, anytime.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study. ¶¶